Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Let's dig in here on the story of the day, which is also the topic du jour. So George Kittle is going to make $15 million a year, right? Did I read that right? Right. $40 million guaranteed with injury, $30 million guaranteed at signing. That's the first 2 years basically up front. The $40 million guaranteed is more than twice that of any other tight end. And the $30 million guaranteed at signing includes $18 million in signing bonus, also record amount, 12 more than Austin Hooper. Okay, so then Travis Kelce's deal is going to get done as well. But then you compare it to that of Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, Michael Thomas, and you're like, okay, wide receivers, more money, but why Brandon Cooks at $16 million? You know? Cooks is really more the outlier because the rest, you know, from Stephon Diggs to Davante Adams to Jarvis Landry to Adam Thielen, those guys command a double team. And if you can influence more than one football player on the field, you have more value. And while you could say, hey, for a pass-catching tight end, Kittle's a very good blocker, he is. He's not Gronk. Gronk's essentially was an additional offensive lineman in addition to being a great pass-catching tight end, the ultimate hybrid guy. But it's not like wide receivers are not allowed to block, and the very best do, in fact, block when called upon. But we're at this weird time where it feels like the transition is upon us. Running backs are becoming devalued. Tight ends are becoming more valued. Wide receivers, obviously, a bunch more value. But the tight ends are catching up on wide receivers and surpassing that of running backs for the most part. Unless you like Christian McCaffrey, who, you know, can influence multiple people, can catch the ball 100 times out of the backfield, as well as run it for over 1,000 yards. If you can do two things, well, now all of a sudden you become super valuable. So, the problem was, by my estimation, we'd had false prophets in the past. Jimmy Graham, for example, is a false prophet. Jimmy Graham was the guy who, when he was in New Orleans, he wanted to be paid like a wide receiver. The problem with Jimmy Graham was he blocked less than wide receivers. And New Orleans played that game and played it very, very smartly. They knew that Jimmy Graham had a ceiling and he bumped up against it. He's also one of those guys in the middle that, as a former basketball player, wasn't as hard to replace as the two or three or four elite level tight ends. Those guys are hard to replace. So now Hunter Henry's up, but we already have Travis Kelce. We already have George Kittle. Gronk, obviously, on a one-year deal. Kyle Rudolph at the end of his deal, although I think he's had his deal reworked. And Ertz and Hunter Henry likely to get new contracts. And what you know, teams, what they say doesn't matter. What they do does. And these are teams saying what we've all believed, which is the right guy, the right tight end, is valuable in the run game, in the pass game. And he's too big, too strong for any defensive back, and just too athletic for any linebacker to cover. That's what Kelce is. That's what Kittle is. And that's why they deserve to be paid. But let's also remember that this is just like quarterbacks, right? Like, there is a massive drop-off. You know, like, I like Jack Doyle, but he's been hurt a bunch. Cameron Brake. You know, Greg Olsen, for example, if he's the 10th best tight end who's had a borderline Hall of Fame career, but he's in his mid-30s. Eric Ebron, Blake Jarwin, Tyler Eifert. Tyler Eifert's been hurt just a bunch. Jason Witten's well over the hill. Jacob Hollister's a good player. Darren Fells, Noah Fant's a young, I think, rising star. But there's a lot of quarterback to tight ends in that there are tiers. Kittle, Kelsey. I think you put Hunter Henry in there if he stays healthy, but he is not. And you probably still put Gronk, even though you haven't seen him play in a year. And then I like Zach Ertz. And then the next group, you put the Kyle Rudolphs and Jared Cooks and Darren Wallers and Tyler Higbees and Greg Olsons of this world. And then you start working your way down to Jimmy Graham. Maybe put Jared Cook in the second group. But I think there are tiers. I think the league is smart. I don't think they're all as or more valuable than wide receivers, but I do think the best are, in fact, because they're that much of a matchup nightmare. And here's the other thing, and this is really important. While the top end may not be as high as that of Michael Thomas, if I was building a team, especially for a young quarterback, wouldn't you, to me, you'd go after the tight end before you'd go, the elite level tight end, before you go after the elite level wide receiver. Now, I'll grant you, the elite level wide receiver takes two people off the football field, off the grid, and makes reading a defense much easier. Hey, if there's not a safety over the top, we're going to Julio Jones. I do understand that. But those guys are so hard to find. There's been so many misses with wide receivers in the NFL draft that if it was me, I would go tight end first, wide receiver second. Obviously, offensive line, defensive front. And then I'm looking tight end more than I'm thinking go get a big-name wide receiver out of college because, as we pointed out right around the draft, only three of the last 19 first-round pick wide receivers have actually made it. You get all these guys. There's so much value to tight ends because you don't have to get them in the first round. You know? So your initial contract isn't that great, and your secondary contract, as big as this one is, these are the biggest of their kind, you're still saving money. I'm trying to think what tight ends are if there's a car analogy, right? Where suddenly they're becoming more and more valuable and understood. They've been around for a long time, and now you like them even more. And, oh yeah, by the way, they cost you a little bit less. They last you a good long time. They help you in the run game, and they cost you less off the top if you draft them because they're not going to be first-round draft picks.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
This was former NBA executive John Hollinger on our show, the Doug Gottlieb Show, talking about the Lakers matchup with the Blazers.
When you say give them a series, like, yeah, they'd give them a series. I don't think they can win. You know, can they take them to six games? Sure. L.A.'s kind of been slow to get into their groove here. I think some of that's intentional. I mean, we've seen LeBron James do this before.
Yeah, we've seen LeBron James do this before. The one thing about LeBron is, man, he doesn't look great. He's just not moving great. You know? Like, look, end of the day, we can set up and say the Lakers are the worst shooting team in the bubble. The Lakers don't have Avery Bradley. The Lakers will probably have Rondo by then, but Rondo's a shell of his former self, and it's not like Rajon Rondo's a total game changer for the team. There's good. There's some not so good as well. But, at the end of the day, they do have the best record in the West, and this would be a massive upset if the Portland Trailblazers, who are still a couple games below 500, were to beat them in a neutral site. Right? This basically comes down to, are they going to let Damian Lillard beat them? That's what it comes down to. Are you going to let Damian Lillard beat you? Is Damian Lillard better than LeBron and Anthony Davis combined? CJ McCollum is an absolute warrior, right? Like, this dude's playing with fractures in his back. You have a slimmed up, over the hill, we didn't want him in L.A. Melo. I like Nurkic. He shouldn't be as good as Anthony Davis, right? Zach Collins is a kid. Super talented, just a kid. You know, it's a great story. Is it a great team? No. And they're going to have to play at least one more game against the 9 seed in order to actually get into the playoffs. All of that, don't give me this. Lakers are in trouble. The Lakers are in trouble. They're in trouble because LeBron didn't have it anymore. That's about as simple as it gets. If the Lakers lose that series, it does fall on LeBron. Now, I'm not saying he has to win an NBA title because this team may be so flawed and you're going against a really deep, less flawed Clippers team potentially. Okay. And it's not his fault that Avery Bradley chose to opt out. I would put some of the personnel stuff on LeBron because, you know, he let some of the offseason, like, look, you show up at Darren Collison's house when he's retired or talking about retirement. If you're LeBron James, you're like, I live in Brentwood. Where does he live? All right, cool, let's go. Send me the address. You put it in your phone, you show up. Who is it? LeBron. Hey, man, what are you doing for the next 6 months? Want to play some basketball? Right? Make him say no to you, LeBron. It's not tampering if you're not on any team. If you're retired. So, it's not, I mean, I'm not going to put all of that on him and the Avery Bradley thing. You know, I don't know what the conversations, if there were conversations between LeBron and Avery Bradley, but God, it looks silly. Doesn't it? Oh, I don't want to go with safety. There's been no positive tests. Everybody that followed the protocol is good. And now they got their families, friends, and some form of loved ones showing up on campus in Disney. Oops. And if it was about the movement, where you been? What have you been doing? So I think the Avery Bradley thing's a massive miss, not just for Avery Bradley, but also for the rest of the LA Lakers. All that said, the lack of depth at the position, the inability to get Darren Collison or keep Avery Bradley, like some of that does fall on the shoulders of LeBron. And even without all of those dudes, they still should be good enough. And it'll say a lot about Anthony Davis, right? We gave him a pass in New Orleans. We're like, he's the only guy. Super young, only guy. Now he's not young, not the only guy, not even the go-to guy. He's the second guy. And if somehow they were upset by the Portland Trailblazers or somebody in the first round, some of that blame should go on Anthony Davis. I don't like the laying the groundwork for the upset and the excuses. Well, you know, they didn't have Rondo. Rondo can't shoot. He didn't help him. Not a good defender anymore. Well, you know, it's not LeBron's fault they can't shoot threes. Some of it is. He's allowed to shoot and make three-pointers. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he's such a good passer. Maybe he's passing out of rhythm. And third thing is, like, recruit better players. You recruit them all to the shop, to your TV show. You can't get them to sign with the Lakers or get traded for the Lakers. Like, you can't make these things happen. Some of it does fall on LeBron's shoulders.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
You know who knows way more than I do? Is Bruce Feldman, who joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Bruce, I'd like to point out how hard your job is, because 9 years ago, I broke a story, and I felt like I broke it the right way. At the time, we were both working at I think you were still... 2011, were you at CBS now, or were you at ESPN still then?
No, I was at ESPN.
Yeah, and I remember that I had a couple of really good sources in the Big 12, and one of them called me and said, hey, and he was at A&M, and he was like, dude, we're going to the SEC, they're announcing it tomorrow, they just had a meeting, they called us all in, they said, here's the deal, we're going, and they're assuming that Clemson, Florida State, Missouri... I think are likely to go with us, and I ran it through all the channels, and they're like, good to go. Like, you sure? Good to go. And there was some other guy. There was another guy, as you know, that was covering it, and he wanted no part of it just because it changed so much and people got cold feet, or there was a plan laid out. Anyway, that was 9 years ago today. And those stories, they do, in fact, evolve. So sometimes you have a story, you run it up the flagpole, and you say, look, I got my sources, and I called a bunch of people, and here's what I find out. And by the way, Mike Alden told me I was full of crap. They end up going to the SEC. But your job is really, really hard. What has this story, evolving story of COVID-19 and teams playing, not playing, been like to cover?
Well, it's been messy because every day Doug feels like a week in itself. And some stories move too fast, and it's like you can't really get out in front of it to write about it. I have a story that went up this morning on The Athletic that I started working on Monday and talked to a bunch of sources. And really the genesis of the story is what drove the Pac-12 to its decision. And really a lot of that turned on a Zoom call that the conference coaches, ADs, and commissioner all had on Monday night with their medical experts. And there was a PowerPoint that the medical experts made and showed, and also had a lot of detailed information. And honestly, in that story, over the 90-minute call, really scared a lot of coaches when they heard some of the issues that their medical experts were telling them they have to be mindful of. And I think what makes this story such a complicated one is because there's so many layers to it, and there's an element of like a raw shot test to it where different medical experts in different parts of the country may see things a little differently. And people look at it and go, well, you know, the NBA and the NHL are in a bubble. How come college isn't doing that? Well, it's a different animal. And, you know, the baseball is pressing on, and yeah, there's been bumps in the road. Well, baseball is more of a social distancing sport than certainly football is, and the rosters are bigger. And as one coach pointed out, our guys aren't professionals. So it's very complicated. It's constantly moving. And if anybody tells you they know for certain something that's going to be 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks from now, they're kind of lying to you, or they're lying to themselves. Mm.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Bruce Feldman. Okay, so where is the ACC? They're going to have another meeting, like a final ruling tomorrow?
They are supposed to have a meeting actually later today. We'll see. You know, the whole thing, the president of Florida State talked about its final. Unless they're waving it off, I don't know how you can say, yeah, we're definitely going forward, and that's the final decision, because there's constantly going to be new information. You can't, you know, can't say, well, we're not, there's no chance we're going to back up now. I think at this point, everything I've heard is that there's a lot of optimism in the ACC that they will continue to press forward, but we'll see. I mean, this is all of it is TBD, right? Doug, you and I work at Fox Sports. We have relationships with three conferences that we broadcast. Two of them have canceled the fall season. One of them, the Big 12, is still holding firm. We'll see what it's going to be like if we get to the point where we're doing games starting September 12th, what those games look like, what the college football season and landscape looks like. I mean, it's crazy because we're already in the middle of August right now, and it's just, we're in such uncharted waters with all of it.
Yeah, there was no spring football, and yet it feels like they're going to have a little bit of an elongated training camp because the games have been pushed back. What are some of these coaches saying they think the actual gameplay looks like?
Yeah, that's the other part. Is if you have a new coaching staff or a new system in place, you brought in a new coordinator, maybe you don't have a quarterback who's played before in actual games, it's going to be hard to expect there's going to be smooth sailing here. I mean, never mind the aspect of you could have a bunch of kids, you know, have to quarantine for 2 weeks in a position room or something. So you may not have half your receiving corps, half your linebacker corps, your offensive line. Who knows? I mean, and also, even the folks who are the most optimistic that I've talked to, and that's some folks in the SEC, they are really worried about what happens when the regular students start coming back and what they anticipate is a surge on their campus. And how do you manage that? I mean, they can tell privately all their players, hey, don't go on campus if you don't need to. Take all your classes online. But there's still a lot of concern about potential spread that they could get when the regular students come back.
Bruce Feldman joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. So Nebraska apparently not going to, not going to try and play in the Big 12, not going to try and play in the ACC or the SEC. Now, is it dead as far as them playing? Are they absolutely not going to play games? Because I just wonder why they couldn't be the one non-conference game for all those teams.
I don't know how the Big Ten would look at that. I mean, you're Nebraska. All of a sudden, you're basically turning your nose up at the rest of your league. I don't know how that would work for them going forward. And also, a lot of these games have already been booked in. So I think that was Nebraska trying to defend their players, because a lot of football coaches I've talked to have felt like, look, we asked our guys to be ultra responsible with this. They've done everything we've asked. and it's hard for us to say we've done everything you've done everything we asked, and unfortunately, it's not going to be good enough. We can't play, and I think that's the emotion that you heard from Scott Frost and some other people at Nebraska.
Yeah, no, it's really, really interesting, and I think they could have used the shot in the arm to play, considering that that's a program that so badly needs to kind of gain some momentum. What about Big Ten players like a Justin Fields? Any chance that they don't play in the Big Ten, that they play in the SEC, the Big 12, or the ACC this year?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'd be really surprised. I think when you look at it, if a guy's going to try to transfer to a school, and I'm not saying that won't happen here or there, but first of all, there aren't going to be that many spots, roster spots available. Second of all, if you're a quarterback or almost any position, but especially a quarterback, you're going to have to learn a new system on the fly, all new teammates. You certainly run the risk of putting up bad film. And then keep in mind, you could transfer, try to have a crash course in the system, and then September 10th, the conference determines, you know what, we can't do this. We cannot play. Or there is some kind of issue that comes to the fore, whether it's a player who has had major medical issues and that becomes public, and then it becomes really problematic for conference leadership to press forward. I think one of the things that really hasn't been discussed probably enough is the potential litigation and lawsuit that could be hanging over colleges and college athletics with what we don't know is coming down the pipeline. I'm sure that scares a lot of people in leadership. I mean, you talked about being a reporter in this. I would not want to be an AD, and I definitely would not be in a college president in this environment.
No question about it. Okay. If Saturday was our first, or you know, Saturday's our first game, do you think we actually have football? If you're a betting man, do you think we actually have football games?
It's not this Saturday. It's a month from now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, like does it feel?
I hope we can have it. It seems because of all the, you know, the stuff I had heard from the people who are on the call at the Pac-12 makes me very skeptical that they're going to be.
It's all over the heart issue stuff, right?
Well, it's all over the heart issue, but there's also testing issues that are concerned. The Pac-12 was going to have to, in five of their hotspot teams, were going to have be ramped up to have daily testing. And a lot of those places, that was not viable or feasible. So, again, I think that the virus, as, you know, I've heard this from a bunch of people, the virus is going to make the determination on what happens. And hopefully college football can happen, because then you'd think nothing really bad has happened along the next month or so. But again, you know, one of the coaches I talked to for that story, and I had talked to him right before the story actually published, made this point. He was like, if I have to wear a bleeping mask to coach, we shouldn't be playing football. We can't even get to a practice format. And the upshot of that, and I think this has gotten misconstrued somewhat, people are going to sit back and say two things I think have gotten probably misunderstood about this. One is, wait a minute, you're going to say regular students come back and they can't, and but these guys can't play football? And the reason on that, at least from talking to people both in the Big Ten and the Pac-12, is because it's not just that they're playing football is different than going to classes wearing a mask where you can do social distancing. All of a sudden now you got 100 guys are tackling each other, they're breathing on each other, they're sweating. You know, it's like, it's not golf. And so that's one of the big concerns people have, is why it's different. And then the other part that is different, I think that probably needs to be pointed out, is a lot of people have said, well, there's a mental health component. And yes, there is, but also it's like, well, they're going to get sent home. They're not getting sent home in the SEC, in the MAC. They don't have to leave. I talked to Pac-12 coaches. They're not getting sent home. So I think some of this stuff has gotten either twisted a little bit, and I think that's kind of added to a lot of the confusion that's already out there.
Hmm. Bruce Feldman, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What about feelings towards, you know, commissioners? You know, Larry Scott's been, you know, kind of fighting for his reputation for a couple years now. The Big Ten, you're talking about Kevin Warren walking into an absolute buzzsaw, following a legend, following arguably the greatest commissioner in the history of collegiate sports, right? Here, Mike Slive. Mm-hmm. What does this do to both of their legacies as commissioners?
You know, I think Kevin Warren is the one that, here's the part that puzzled me, Doug, and I did a lot of BTN Monday and Tuesday, and in full disclosure, like a lot of people probably already know this, but you know, at Fox Sports, we have relationship with Big Ten Network. Yeah. And look, all the credit to Dave Revson, their anchor, who did a great job pressing Kevin Warren for specifics. But I'm sitting back there watching this and thinking, people, the whole sports world right now is focusing on you. And this is, the Big Ten is a huge deal, obviously. Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, and a bunch of other big brand programs. And you need to give us some. I'm not saying, you know, whether there's HIPAA issues. I'm not saying you need to identify specific players. But when it comes out later through our through The Athletic on our site that there's at least 10 student-athletes in the Big Ten are dealing or have been diagnosed with myocarditis, that probably would have been a good detail for him to disclose at least, because I think a lot of people on the outside are going, why did he do this? Why did they shut it down? And first of all, look, it wasn't just his decision. I mean, it's really the presidents of the conference who make that determination. But in terms of the messaging of that, I don't think they helped themselves with that. On the flip side, I think Larry Scott in the Pac-12, he's been an easy target with a lot of things, and rightly so, I think, because I think they made a lot of big mistakes image-wise. But I thought in that regard, they had Ray Anderson, the Arizona State AD. They had their chair of their medical advisory board on there. He was on there. And one of the college presidents. So I think they had the right people to be on there to talk about it. And look, you know, I think they were a lot more on the same page than I think we saw with the Big Ten, where we're talking about Nebraska, and then there's like, you know, a quick story in Ohio State about what's going on with them that does a quick 180. And so it just seemed very unlike what you become accustomed to in the Big Ten on that front.
Yeah, really interesting. Great stuff, Bruce. Doing an awesome job covering this. Always respect you and appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
All right, thanks, Doug.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Charles Robinson joins us, Yahoo Sports, covering the National Football League. It feels like that profession that's finally getting recognized. Like, man, finally, like, remember when we were kids, I said this, Charles, remember when we were kids, doctors and lawyers, those are the ones that own the big houses, right? And that's like running backs. Whereas now all of a sudden tight ends getting paid in the National Football League. Why'd it take so long?
Because the position had to change. You know, I think I remember there was a time when you and I watched tight ends, and the version of tight ends that we watched for a long time, these were guys that, you know, were going to catch 50 passes, they're going to put up 600 yards, and there's, you know, a 4-touchdown season, and that was going to be potentially a Pro Bowl level tight end if he could block, you know. And this isn't, you know, Vasanthi Shenko. These are guys that, frankly, They're closer to wideouts, you know, in terms of the passing scheme now than ever before. And if they can be those guys who can be massive mismatches, but then they're physical, they can block, they especially love to run block. If they're just special players, they're going to get special money. And I think Gronk was probably, you know, Antonio Gates, Gronk, you know, there have been a couple of guys that have come down the pipeline where you're like, you know, Tony Gonzalez, you're like, that is a Hall of Fame caliber tight end. Now we're starting to see some of those guys come through the pipeline. And I think Kelsey and George Kittle both fall in that mold.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Charles Robinson, senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports. Follow him on Twitter at Charles Robinson, or check out his Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. You know, I'm watching Hard Knocks, and obviously there's not a lot of buzz to it. But I do think that because there are so many limitations in place with how much these guys have been able to get together, how much work has been able to be done, it does, if I use that on the macro, it feels like the teams that have the most remaining from last year are going to be the most successful, i.e. the Kansas City Chiefs and the 49ers. It feels like a year in which teams that stayed the same will stay the same in terms of the standings.
Well, veterans, I mean, there's something to be said about an offseason in which teams don't get a hold of guys. You know, you don't get them in for the OTAs. You don't get them in for the mini camps. You're not, you know, they're not in lifting, you know, all these different things. And even from a, you know, a schematic standpoint, you know, even the classroom work, I know guys are doing it over Zoom and all this stuff, but I don't think it's the same, you know, because look, guys can be competitive in meeting rooms. You know, one of my favorite stories ever told was when, you know, Jacoby Brissett was a backup to Tom Brady and he got asked a question in a meeting and he didn't answer it fast enough. Like, he literally paused and Tom Brady just answered it, like ran over him in a meeting room. And basically Tom Brady's message to him was, yo, get the let out, be on it, either answer it or don't. Like, if you can't answer it, I'm going to answer it for you. I don't care if the question's to you. And, you know, players lose some of that over Zoom meetings. You know, you're not, you know, some guys are very competitive in the classroom. Drew Brees is historically, like, they drafted Garrett Grayson to replace Drew Brees, and Drew Brees ruined him in the classroom because he was like, look, I'm going to be competitive in here, and if you don't keep up, oh well. And, you know, so I think some of that's lost, and I do believe that teams with veteran rosters, guys who have been there before, gone through the monotony of certain parts of preparing, are going to be a lot easier to deal with. And it's why, frankly, I'm not surprised that the Seattle Seahawks, you run into an undrafted rookie, is the guy who's trying to sneak a woman, you know, into the hotel in Seahawks gear. I mean, it's a ridiculous story, but that doesn't surprise me.
It's an all. Let's take a little second, though. It's an all-timer, right?
Now, I mean, this is a good, look at your eyes, a good story.
It's an all, like, in terms of this, like, this is like a, who was it who had the Wizinator? I'm trying to remember who has the Wizinator.
The running back for the Vikings. Oh, man, I can't believe I'm not going to remember this. We'll get back to it.
We'll get back to it. So for people,
Wizinator, though, was up there.
Right? Wizinator was down there, but up there, yes. Kima Siverin, who played at A&M and at Oklahoma State, he tried to sneak a girl in. It was Ontario Smith. There you go. Ontario Smith is
Ontario the, Smith. That there was you
go. All time.
It's always good to have a producer in your ear.
Yes.
when you're on a duel.
Yes, and the internet. And the internet. The internet works
the internet
really well.
As well.
So he tries to sneak her in, and she dresses with Seahawks gear in an effort to be thought of as a Seahawk player. Which, I mean, I would hope she doesn't look like a Seahawk player. I guess that's actually the good takeaway from it, is she was attractive enough to not be, you know, misconstrued with Sam Gash, right? Like, she didn't look like a dude. She didn't have traps popping out of her ears like some of these NFL dudes with.
Yeah, she didn't have guns. You know, she's not walking in with the, you know, the Aaron Donald guns. But yeah, look, it's definitely an all-timer. But I'm also like, yeah, this doesn't blow my mind in terms of knowing, you know, this is a young. I'm sorry, but young guys. Not that veterans don't make stupid mistakes, but I think this is one of those seasons. Knowing what a lot of those NFLPA calls were like, you know, knowing, you know, who got involved in this process and, you know, being concerned, in a way it mirrored, weirdly enough, I think it mirrored society. Like, when I would talk to people, you know, with the union, they would say, like, yeah, you know, you don't hear a lot of concern from the 22, 23, 24-year-olds. Like, most labor situations, you don't hear a lot of concern from the 22, 23, 24-year-olds. But it's the guys that are in their 30s who know how hard it was to stick in this league. Who know that, hey, grinding out 5, 6, 7 years in a pension and, you know, providing for your family while playing football as long as you possibly can, those tend to be the guys that don't make a mistake this stupid this early. Now, that's not to say that a vet won't do it in November. You know, that's not to say there won't be a Clevenger situation or, you know, a Miami Marlins situation where people just start to do stupid stuff out of the sheer boredom of what this is going to be like. But, I mean, come on, man. We are, like, right on the doorstep. We just got here. You know, they're not even pads yet. There's no contact. Like, and for this to happen now is just absolutely, you know, it's foolish. But you have a lot of teams around the league that their hotel situations are set up.
Yeah.
And the rookies are in the hotel. So, like, the Los Angeles Chargers is a good example. I was talking to somebody with the Chargers, and he said, yeah, man, you know, we we do have a hotel set up. And he said, that's where the rookies are. And he said, and there are rooms available for the veterans if they want them. And they're like, but, you know, that's where we're putting our rookies. And I sat there and I thought, man, if there's going to be something dumb that happens, it's probably going to be with the rookies in the hotels because they're not completely cordoned off. And, you know, those are the guys that are probably going to be least responsible up front, even though that, you know, some of them clearly need jobs and, you know, are cuttable. But I'll tell you what, it is another one of these moments, though, and Major League Baseball has provided most up to this point, but it's another one of those moments that other teams are going to seize upon. And I'm telling you, I guarantee the next couple of days, and I wouldn't even be surprised if we saw it on Hard Knocks. I guarantee you're going to see coaches or personnel, you know, GMs who are saying to players, hey, look at what just happened. Like, right. Absorb that.
Sure. Yeah,
because that's real. And that's going to happen here if this happens.
Yep. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Charles Robinson joining us. That said, it felt like a lot of quick opt-outs before the guys really knew what the protocols looked like. I know that was how the deal worked. You know, what I saw in Hard Knocks was like, yeah, I mean, they got like legit protocols. It feels like they'll be prepared. I do understand, you know, that this heart condition is a real possibility if you
right.
contract COVID, and that's the big fear. My thing is, I actually think you're just as likely, if not more likely, to contract COVID at home as you are in a facility or playing football. The only difference is you're being tested daily in the National Football League. That said, like, how badly hurt was Kansas City? Damian Williams, obviously, they replaced in the draft, but he might have been their best player for most of the Super Bowl. And then you lose a really talented offensive lineman. I know that New England was badly hurt, but it feels like Kansas City was as well.
Yeah, Kansas City, you lose a veteran offensive lineman, you lose a rookie offensive lineman, so that's depth right there. I mean, so you're seeing depth loss. You know, you talk about losing a running back who is a veteran, multi-talented. Now, granted, you did take a running back in the first round and who's, you know, going to be extremely talented in Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but the problem is with rookie running backs, those are typically, unless they're really special guys, those are people who teams don't trust until you're halfway through a season
right.
because they have to prove that they can protect a quarterback. And, you know, so yeah, from a depth standpoint, it definitely isn't great, but Kansas City is just, I mean, they're loaded. It's ridiculous. Like, you look at the roster and you just sit there and you go, they kept everybody. They didn't lose Chris Jones. They extended him. You know, they extended, the quarterback, they extended the tight end, they extended all these special players, and they didn't suffer yet. And I think next year's really, we're going to see this moving forward. They didn't suffer the gutting that happens to a lot of Super Bowl teams where all of a sudden in free agency, a lot of like mid-tier guys seem very attractive because they're coming off of Super Bowl teams. I think that's still a year away for Kansas City, but to me, yeah, I think even though they lost a little bit, I just don't see how Kansas City didn't walk out of this offseason going, man, it's here for us. Like we could very easily repeat as champions this year. You know, we've got all these pieces, and that offense is just, it's absurd. And this may actually be one of the few years where off the bat, offenses should be way ahead of, you know, usually it's the opposite. Defenses are way ahead. But I think if you have a veteran offensive group, knows the scheme, knows, and you have a quarterback who has a cannon like, you know, Patrick Mahomes, and who can be creative, which is where the league is with quarterbacks, defenses are going to have a hell of a time with Kansas City already. And I think this is going to be one of those seasons where not having the hitting, not having all that continuity in the offseason is going to hurt the defenses that face them right away. I would not. The AFC West is, good luck.
Yeah,
next 10 years, you're going to be drafting to deal with Pat Mahomes for 10 years.
But last thing, Charles Robinson joining us, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Charles, a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports, has a great podcast, Yahoo Sports NFL Podcast. You do talk to lots of people in the league. What's their level of confidence that this thing will go off on time?
I think it's better. I really do. I think it's improved because I think the fear was when the COVID testing began and guys started getting to facilities, the fear was that, you know, there could be a huge spate of positives that they just don't know are there. And, or that there would be some asteroids, like just like maybe some big time quarterbacks would have it, or in the opt-outs, there would be some, you know, just mind-blowing opt-outs. Now, you know, there were some good players that opted out. There's no doubt. But, I mean, like, you know, people are like, whoa, C.J. Mosley opted out. I'm like, all right, well, C.J. Mosley wasn't really on the field for the Jets last year. I mean, Cam Hayward's a guy who could have opted out, you know, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, didn't. Von Miller's a guy who could have opted out for the Broncos. So, like, even some of these guys, I think, were sort of expected stars who could have opted out, didn't. I think teams were optimistic that it wasn't this huge run of super above board guys. The Patriots were surprising with the number, but, and then beyond that, the testing, the overall testing, even the union's like, hey, it's well below 1% for everybody. Like, you throw everybody in it, and that matters. You got to have the cauldron of personnel, people, support staff, everybody there for it to be well below 1%. And you're just starting here. And it hasn't really gone in the opposite direction, you know, in the early going. I think people feel a lot better about it. And now let me put it this way. Right now, teams are struggling with, like, hey, if we're going to have fans, how do we figure that out?
Right.
It's less of an operational, you know, football standpoint. We'll shift a little more toward that when they hit each other, and they start hitting each other, you know, the third week of August, you know. So we're about 12 more days from that. We'll see then if the dynamic changes a little bit. So
I said
it was still good.
Yeah, I said it was last one. I lied. I got one more. Joe Montana told USA Today that Tom Brady said they listened to him and then didn't take any of his suggestions. How much of that is because we always operated under the premise that him and McDaniels were boys, were close, you know, and that McDaniels and his relationship was like brothers.
Right.
I was a little bit surprised. I'm not surprised in terms of it's based upon personnel, but in terms of what they did and how they did it, that's kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, and I actually think it's a little bit of both. Like, you know, I'll give you an example. Like, he was upset about Antonio Brown. Like, he really was upset that they, you know, just washed their hands of Antonio Brown, particularly because Tom was such a big part of getting him in there, getting him on the right page, accepting him. Like, I mean, Brady brought him into his home, like all these different things.
Right.
And then, you know, the Patriots pulled the plug. And frankly, you know, Tom's pretty cutthroat. And I think part of his thought process was, you just took away a guy who could have been the difference for us. Like, you know, and then he sat there and you saw they struggled offensively. I think that was part of it. I would like Joe to be a little more specific. You know, let me put it this way. You've heard a lot of stories over the years over what was frustrating Brady, and it's been a, you know, myriad of different things. And I think those things are all going to bleed out over the years. And maybe someday there's a, you know, the big Last Dance documentary or the Lance document, whatever it is. And obviously it's coming because Tom's cut that deal. And I think some of that stuff maybe eventually might get out. It's going to be incumbent upon Tom, though, to actually say, like, here are a couple of things that really piss me off. And I'll say this about what Montana said. Don't think that there weren't some legitimate frustrations on Tom's part in terms of he always felt like he deserved a bigger seat at the table in terms of the decision making and or at least the input and feeling like he was heard. Not uncommon with quarterbacks. I mean, there's many of these. Aaron Rodgers, another guy. I want to be heard.
They want to be, well, look, it's actually a lot like Aaron. I want to be heard. And, oh yeah, by the way, don't be drafting somebody to replace me, right? Like, I mean, I was told Peyton Manning, who's like the best, but every time somebody was drafted in Indianapolis, he'd call the GM, be like, who is this guy? Like, why are we taking that? Why, you know, it could be seventh round. It didn't matter. They all are kind of wired the same. Charles, we got to run. Great stuff. Can't wait to hear the next pod. Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. Charles Robinson, follow him on Twitter as well. Thanks so much, Charles.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Doug.